The Diary of a CTO podcast. Sharing the secrets of successful CTOs. Brought to you by Trumor, the home of technology recruitment. Hosted by Guy Bevington.
So Greg, welcome. Thanks for being here with us today. Been really looking forward to today's episode. So Greg, you are, by way of introduction, the CTO of Fairstone Group. And prior to recording this episode, I've done some research and I've got some pretty impressive numbers that I want to throw out there as part of the intro to kind of frame today's episode and what it is that Fairstone Group does and how it does it so successfully. So Fairstone is, I think fair to say, one of the fastest growing financial services organisations in the UK and Ireland, with a run rate fee income of in excess of £135 million. The group operates out of 55 locations, made up of over 1,200 operational staff and regulated advisors. You oversee £15 billion in funds under management on behalf of 55,000 wealth management clients. And you recently surpassed 10,000 reviews on Trustpilot. So these are some seriously impressive numbers. So I've been really looking forward to speaking to you today. Even more so, actually, because my old man was an IFA. He's a retired IFA now. So I dare say he'll be listening into this episode intently, so we better make sure it's a good one. But really keen to hear more about your role and some of the work that you're doing at Fairstone. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about you. Maybe give us a little bit of a whistle-stop tour of your background, you know, how you got into tech in the first place and your journey into the role of a CTO.
Thanks for the intro, Guy, and very happy to be here.
Good, thanks, welcome.
So just, I guess, a quick summary. So I had a humble upbringing, humble but happy upbringing in Manchester. Always had an interest, a passion for computing, and just sort of used to play around, understand things, make things.
What was your first PC? Or your first computer, do you remember?
It was the Amiga, really.
Amiga, okay.
I used them mainly for gaming.
Nice. I had an Amstrad. Do you remember the ones had tapes?
Yes.
Took tapes. Yeah. Bizarre.
Yeah. And then I did technical drawing at school as well, and I learned CAD, and it was just an extension then in terms of just getting pretty hands-on with software applications. So then I ended up, I decided to go to college. One of the A-levels I did was computing, and that was the one that stood out for me. So I went over to Manchester University, and that's where I did computer science. I did a four-year degree, had an internship, so a placement year in the third year, and I worked at Churchill Insurance in London.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a real opportunity for me to get some commercial experience, real experience. I loved it. I spent 6 months as learning how to be an Oracle DBA. And 6 months being a full stack developer. Mm-hmm. So I came back to university, finished my degree, and I chose to stay in Manchester rather than relocate at that time.
Right.
And I got a job as essentially like an Oracle DBA. So I was a technical SQL developer. Mm. And then my career sort of quickly moved, and I ended up transitioning into a technical support role, which required my DBA, my development skills. But what I liked about it, other than it being sort of problem solving, it helped connect technology to the end client and to the business. And I was quite good at being that bridge, really, and using a bit of my communication skills and style with the technical understanding that I've got. Yeah. And then really that's how the career that I've had has progressed, because it went from being a technical Oracle DBA to being technical support, to being team management, to being large scale delivery team management, to being leadership.
Okay.
And then all sort of throughout my journey, I've always specialized in technical skills as well. So I've made sure I was proficient at the time in ITIL. So I became an ITIL expert, and that helped me with the service management, service roles that I did at Liverpool Victoria, which is the company that I joined first in London.
Quite a bit of insurance then.
There was a lot in insurance, and probably the reason for it is the placement that I did at Churchill Insurance, the chap who headhunted me to come back to LV was the CIO.
Oh, right, okay.
So we'd maintain contact.
Yeah.
And then Liverpool Victoria Direct Line, their offices that I was working in are in Croydon and Bromley.
Right.
Okay. So I was essentially headhunted for the Direct Line role.
I see.
And that was described to me as an 18,000 people startup. And I'll be one of the very, I think I was one of three permanent senior people being hired.
Right.
And it was at the time they were about to do an IPO from World Bank of Scotland. So there was this huge separation that was happening over the course of 12 months. And it had a deadline because RBS had set an immovable date when Direct Line had to be out of all the RBS data centres.
Right.
So it was a tremendous opportunity, fantastically challenging period in my career. I spent just over 3 years there and did probably 10 jobs, as in like you just learn to do all sorts of things. And I was working with some very capable senior people from Accenture, KPMG, if you like. And without stepping through all of it, I was headhunted to go to Close Brothers to go and set up a change function, basically. And that was based off some of my experience before. I changed technology function. Fast forward, Brune Dolphin, I think it's just the nature of the roles. So I was headhunted and there was a lot of transition through the senior leadership at Close Brothers. So talking to Brune Dolphin, who were looking for somebody to join them for sort of the next 5 years plus as a head of technology, that really rang true. So that was my sort of leap into wealth management full. I mean, okay. Close Brothers did wealth, but they also did premium finance and lots of other things. And then spent best part 3.5 years at Brune Dolphin and was approached by Fairstone. And Fairstone and Brune, albeit there's a significant difference in age of the business, because Brune's one of the oldest wealth managers in the UK. Fairstone's one of the, it's not necessarily the newest, but we are certainly not 250 years old.
Yeah.
But the big opportunity and the thing that was really compelling for me to join Fairstone was the challenge was set that bring all of the experience and expertise that you've got from the FTSE firms that you've worked at over the past 10 to 15 years and leave all the sort of red tape and the inefficient crap behind and come and implement the best possible process and build the best possible team you can here and then grow with us.
Okay.
And then naturally, we may even be able to start thinking about catching up or even taking over some of our competitors because we're not doing the things that are just inherent in large firms. And it's, I reported to Lee, our founder, CEO, and it's very fast-paced decision-making business. So it's quite refreshing. It's quite different. And it's also private equity backed. It's, whereas the other companies were FTSE with shareholders. So again, there's a little bit perhaps more speed in direction and what we're going to do. That's
cool. That's what brought. Brilliant. Thanks for that. And I mean, is it fair to say, just from my understanding of the Fairstone thus far, it almost feels a bit like a challenger bank in the wealth management service space. That's sort of a fair description.
Yeah, definitely. We see ourselves as a modern fintech, wealth tech to some extent.
Yeah.
But we do run and we want to continue running the business like a startup.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean necessarily everyone's got their heads on fire and doing 25 jobs and worrying about what's around the corner. It's we've established ourselves. We understand our business. We understand our market, and we know how to get bigger. So let's not get bloated. Let's be lean and invest in the teams and the capabilities at the right time that need it, and that's going to give the biggest value for buck. Because ultimately, as a brand new business, growing and getting to a point where you've now got a sustainable business model, you're not going to go out of business overnight because you've got that recurring income and that sort of client base.
Yeah.
Then you can then look to mature. So for example, like coming into Fairstone, there are many technical capabilities that just don't necessarily exist on their own. The individual technical individuals do different things, multiple roles.
Yeah.
Then as you scale, you want to have more segregation of duties, but you can't do that straight away. And it's like any business any role in a new business, people have to do multiple things, HR, operations, finance, marketing. Mm. But what we've been doing and what I've instinctively been doing since I joined Fairstone is incrementally growing the team and establishing the team to be something that can follow a modern solution delivery life cycle.
Okay.
So where we've actually got design, change, run, protect, and we've got a modern, not just a technology team, but a change capability for the organization. Step by step, that's what we're doing. Sort of think big.
Always plan.
Think big, start small, move as fast as you can.
Move fast, break stuff.
We're definitely into that mindset. It's going really well.
Cool, fantastic. And just again, from my kind of research into the business, it feels like your business model is quite a refreshing one for that wealth management world. It seems very transparent and, you know, not sort of tying customers into a committed space where a lot of people often get overwhelmed, I think, when they think about is it the right decision for me. So I can understand how you guys are achieving 20% growth year on year, to be honest. So fair play, good on you. So talk us through then, when you entered into that role as CTO, it sounds like you kind of had the gauntlet laid down to say, right, go and achieve this, bring all your past experience that you can bring to bear and make it happen. How have you gone about that process of engaging and aligning with the business as a CTO? How have you sort of, how do you approach senior stakeholder management and that kind of thing? Talk us through that sort of journey, how you've gone about it.
I think the approach is very similar to the way I've approached any role. It's just the audience and the responsibilities are a bit bigger. But first and foremost, I take responsibility. I've got a pen. Book stops with me to a certain extent. And find solutions and then lead by example and make it happen. So there's nowhere to hide, and I would never want to do that. So it is literally a case of meeting people. It's high expectations often from a technology team because technology is either the best thing or the worst thing or somewhere in between. And it is a bit of a dark art. So for me, it's always about taking ownership, finding solutions, making it happen. Your communication style, you need to tailor your communication style in a modern organization to be successful. So you can't just be one way or the highway with your stakeholders and also your team. And the teams all need I find a diverse team, especially in IT. You need to cater for different personalities and different styles, essentially. And if you don't, then you won't necessarily harmonize the team. You won't get the best out of the team. And it's not okay to be a traditional, stereotypical, introverted nerd who's difficult to communicate with, because that doesn't persist in modern organizations. There's a much more expectation that a technology leader will also contribute and be part of the business strategy and the business exec. So
Agree. Is that something you felt you've had to? I totally agree with you, and I think it's some of the best CTOs I've ever worked with. You wouldn't necessarily know they're from a technical background, really. They're kind of so soft skills are great and very articulate and sort of are able to do that, winning hearts and minds and taking people on a journey and that kind of thing. Is that something that came naturally to you? Do you feel something you had to work at, or is it where were you sort of placed on that?
I think I've probably worked harder at the sort of the deep technical implementation as opposed to the collaboration and
That kind of came a bit more naturally.
Maybe the sales, I could have been a technical sales agent.
Could have worked in recruitment.
Maybe.
Doors always open.
Although I have been told I should have been a recruiter by a couple of ex colleagues who were recruiters. I've got quite a good track record of finding people myself, and then the recruitment agent saying, "What are you doing? Stop putting us out of business."
Fair enough.
But it's easier, I find it, if you're quite very specific about the type of skills and people you want to find, even on a free LinkedIn license, there's quite a lot you can do quite quickly, and you can refine it down to an area.
Absolutely, You have to have this analytical mindset. You like just honing in on things. I guess it's about time, isn't it? It's whether you've got the, you know, the time to go and do that. But if you can, I know quite a few C-suite clients actually who are very good at direct recruitment, you know, finding good people. But like you say, sometimes you wish they weren't. But anyway, I interrupted you a little bit around your approach. So yeah, the soft skills piece, yeah, totally agree with that, and makes sense. Is there anything else on that point?
No, not on that. I think it probably blends into another topic we were going to touch on, just about prioritizing. And
yeah, that's a good question. So how do you go about, you know, you kind of thrown into the mix, and you've probably got all these different people, you know, giving you different objectives or different projects potentially. How do you go about that whole prioritization piece, entering into the role of a CTO of, you know, where you deem the best to get business value?
Yeah, so getting organized in any, well, certainly in any role that I've been in, has been the first thing I've done. And in a technology role, CTO role, you have to get organized, because if you don't have a prioritization process to help determine what you're going to focus on and what order and why, then you're never going to be able to steady the ship and make improvements.
Mm.
So it's typically, there's a combination of just running the business. Are there operational incidents? Are there outages all the time? Are there potential cyber risks and data breaches that are either about to happen or happening?
Mm.
And that's just keeping the business safe, essentially, and operating. And then there's all of the strategic change and from a business perspective. And from a technology sort of horizon perspective, what's coming and what should we be thinking about? So there's a big element of run and protect. So keep the business running and just make it work. If you're an end user, I mean, I'm an end user in some ways. I don't want things to be slow, offline.
Yeah.
So just make it work, basically, is a big part of the role. And then the other bit is then just deliver stuff and make it better.
Yeah.
And if you're not organized, you cannot do that. Mm-hmm. And I found in different places that the teams often have a really bad reputation for not delivering or not committing, not being able to deliver what they've committed to. And when you peel it back, quite often the problem is the priorities are changing all the time. Mm-hmm. And therefore you start something and then you don't finish it because you do something else, and then you get a reputation for not doing what you said you were going to do.
Yeah.
So it's hiding to nothing, you can't win. Yeah. So the only way to do it is to properly get control of and get organized of all of the work that the team are doing. You then establish a work prioritization or a portfolio management process. Absolutely have to get buy-in to how that works with your senior stakeholders.
Mm.
And then it depends how you prioritize, depends on the organization. So it could be a business which is founder-led, like ours. The CEO is very much still hands-on and want to be directly involved in decision making. Mm-hmm. And prioritization, whereas other firms, it might be an executive team, it might be a change committee, might be decentralized a little bit, but either way you have to tailor the approach to prioritize what's going to happen and translate that into a roadmap and then communicate that roadmap and then deliver it with conviction, basically, because if you show there's any drifting of the plan that you've got and you've agreed, then people will just start to change it. And even when it is in place, it's in the people's nature. People want to make changes, which is called change request, which should therefore lead to a replan and a baseline and new dates. But that doesn't always happen. So I think whatever you do, you have to agreement/consensus with your senior team. You have to make it transparent, so there's no I didn't see that, I don't remember that.
Mm.
Then you have to communicate it and tell people what you're doing. You have to do it, make it happen, and then I would just say you've got to hold on hold the reins and only actually change direction if it's approved and go from there. And then incrementally, that's probably the biggest, one of the big things is don't try and implement too big a program or project at once, unless you absolutely have to.
Yeah.
Because delivering value on a regular incremental basis just instills confidence, and people can see it, and people can see things happening and improving.
I think that's it, isn't it? It's delivering that sort of, you know, baby steps to winning hearts and minds is actually just delivering and seeing it. And, you know, and I think you're so right about businesses, a lot of businesses, especially when you're in that kind of startup mentality where there is that tendency to just, you know, go to the next shiny thing and never actually deliver anything. And then all of a sudden people turn around and go, well, what's Tex actually done for the business? And you're like, well, you know, I've kind of just been going off the basis of what the priorities were. But I think, yeah, having confidence in your own volition and holding the course, like you say, I think is yeah, really valuable trait and very important, absolutely, in the role of a CTO. And also for everybody in your team as well, for them to kind of feel like they're making progress and actually what they're doing is making it into the wider business as well.
Otherwise it can be demoralising.
Yeah.
Because often a lot of the development team, especially, they want to see their efforts be translated into something that the actual or value that the business can use. And if there's constantly changing of direction, it can be frustrating.
Totally.
So that's that sort of getting organised, a byproduct of that is protecting the team and trying to close the doors and the windows and the chimney of all the different ways.
Not physically. Not like you can't leave until you've done this.
There's always a window open that someone climbs through and asks your team to do something. But it's like trying to basically just make it one way in, one way out. But in a respectful but professional way.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I can understand that. I think it's, a nice trait of a leader to think about. It's not just about you, it's about the team as well.
Something just to throw in. I watched an interview with the CEO founder of Airbnb a couple of months ago. And he described something that resonated with where I've been at times. And he talked about how challenging it can be to integrate teams at different stages of a transformation journey.
Right.
Because at some point on that journey, the team needs to be reconfigured slightly. It doesn't mean people leave or get demoted or someone goes, but it's about recognizing when you need to add experience or fresh blood or diversify and expand slightly. The Airbnb video described it or likened it to climbing Mount Everest and that base camp.
Oh yeah,
the helicopter of, you know, new people sort of come in and land, and then there's this potential conflict between those that have worked so hard to get to base camp and those that have just come in on the helicopter. But actually, what's really important is that if you've got to respect and try and understand it from each other's perspective, because both parties are absolutely going to enable the team to be successful, and without one or the other, it wouldn't happen. So
it's trying to
think about that when you do inevitably hit some challenge to you wanting to do things differently. But if you don't do things differently, you're not going to continue past base camp.
That's not. I like that. It's a nice analogy. I've not heard that one before, but I'll steal that one if you don't mind. But I guess on that point, you know, for you as a leader and sort of being self-aware, you know, what are there any other really valuable traits or qualities that you try and embody as a tech leader?
Absolutely try and keep things simple. So use day-to-day analogies, metaphors, communicate when required, not just all the time about what's happening. Maybe we do so many of this. People are busy. Everyone's got stuff going on. We don't need to tell everyone everything we're doing, but we need to make sure it's working and we're making it better.
Yeah.
And I think just trying to develop people internally. It's probably one of the things I'm proudest of in my career, perhaps, is the amount of people that I've given a chance, the amount of people that I've developed and promoted and seen them go on to do brilliant and better things in some instances.
Interesting.
Because really, it's just about, we've all been there, and you build quite a diverse culture just by having people of different ages, let alone backgrounds. And then if you can support people, you get loads back. and then they can support the next load of people. Mm. And I've done that across, I've built many different football teams, if you like, across the years, and all very different. And the makeup of that successful team is always dependent on the culture of the company that I'm going into.
Right.
So I wouldn't always just hire the same people for the different organisations, because I just don't think it would work.
Interesting. Okay.
Whereas I've adapted or been selected to go into a company because of my style, perhaps, or my experience, but I've never built the same type. I've built same kind of teams within skill sets, because you need certain disciplines to be run a technology team.
Yeah.
But the stakeholder management style, definitely, I've tailored that.
That's interesting. Yeah, I've not heard that before. So you would kind of tailor almost the culture of the team, or what's the piece you're sort of tailoring dependent on the scenario?
It's the makeup of the team, the non-technical aspects of the team. So behaviours, style, leadership, communication style.
Yeah.
Level of experience. So, for example, like easy example is one of the things that is a concern often. It's my understanding through the interview process I went through with the agency that I was contacted by, is that private equity backed firms often do not like to hire people from large FTSE corporate organisations, because their work ethic is slightly different. Doesn't mean they work any less hard, but what they do is different.
Mm.
And I can appreciate that. So there's a stereotype that people in corporate FTSEs will attend committees and decisions will be made after 2 weeks, a month, and things will slowly move, and there's quite a lot of governance, red tape, bureaucracy. And I'm not saying it's all not needed, but there's a tendency for that style. Whereas in a private equity doesn't mean small, sorry, but in a non sort of FTSE
scaling business, like a
I think there's just more just JFDI.
Yeah.
You know, let's just have frank conversation. Let's just get on with it. It doesn't mean being rude, too direct, or anything like that. It's just there's a much more fluid way of just getting stuff done.
Yeah.
And I think, whether it's so the type of person and the team you build, you have to tailor it to fit the environment.
Mm.
And I'm sure if there's things in that environment that could be improved, then try and contribute to improving that over time.
Yeah.
But if you go in and build a team of people that just aren't going to fit in,
yeah,
you're not going to fit in, and then there's no point. So it's actually how do you integrate into the business.
That's a really good point, actually, because I've often seen with CTOs, you know, they'll kind of build up a network of people that they've worked with before, and then in certain companies, everywhere they go, irrespective of the situation, they'll just call upon the same people. And like I say, I guess it's not a one size fits all, you know, dependent on the objectives of, you know, the business, where it's going to, and like you say, whether it is a FTSE 100 or a more of a dynamic kind of, you know, VC backed company. But that's interesting. With that in mind, are there sort of still core, core thread of characteristics that you look for in people when you hire them, irrespective of the skill, you know, whether the developer, QA, whatever it may be, and the situation and the culture of the company? Is there still a core sort of set of attributes you look for?
Yeah, I'd say it's always, first and foremost, it's always character.
Okay.
So are they kind? Are the team players are going to fit in? What motivates them? They're the kind of things that just stand out straight away, because ultimately, if I can see that, then the people they work with and stakeholders and just colleagues will see that too. And you can be very delivery, you can be very robust and still be kind. One doesn't preclude the other. So we're not looking for sort of people that roll over and say yes all the time, but actually you recognise that we'll be successful together. So how do we both win?
Mm.
Rather than how do I win. Mm. And then it's then about technical expertise. Have they actually got the skills to do the job, or have they got the drive and desire to obtain those skills with our support and take us forward?
Yeah.
So in that order, so essentially character, will they fit in, and what they're going to bring to the team. And then let's just assume they're good enough, but we'll test that. How are they going to pull? Are they going to push me? Are they going to push my team forwards? Because if they do, that's a great problem. I'd much rather hire people knowing we've got a challenge on our hands, because that's often what I bring, I think. But then it's about making sure you give those individuals sufficient responsibility, challenge, and autonomy just to sort of get on and make it happen.
Mm. Yeah, nice. Yeah, I like the approach there. Makes a lot of sense. Where we are now as a world, technically, you know, it wouldn't be a podcast if we didn't sort of talk about AI and kind of the ever evolving landscape. But yeah, you've obviously clearly got a huge amount of experience in tech. What is it you're most excited about now, and suppose in terms of trends for technology moving forward? Is there anything that sort of still really floats your boat?
Mm-hmm. Well, so AI is obviously the hot topic. Everyone is familiar, not everyone has used it, but I'm pretty sure most people are familiar with ChatGPT and sort of how you use it and what it would produce. What we haven't yet seen is the transition of this new technology into the general business domain, day-to-day businesses.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I probably am quite excited to see what happens as firms adopt Microsoft Copilot, as an example.
Yeah.
So that that was officially launched in November, so it's only a couple of months. And there's been Microsoft and I have been doing quite a lot of work on the pricing structure, trying to determine how best to license it, sell it, grow it. But I think on the basis is over a billion people in the business people in the world using Copilot. Using Office. The logical transition is there's going to be an awful lot of people that are going to be using these solutions.
Yeah.
Like a few use cases, just to scratch the surface from a day-to-day running of a business. Microsoft Teams, so Copilot enables the automatic transcripting of all the meetings using voice transcript. So then what it'll do is you can configure it to, after each call you do, it will summarize the salient actions. It can schedule meetings if it just comes up through a conversation and let's have a follow-up in a couple of weeks and we'll go through this and this. It will just automatically do that for you.
Yeah.
So it's a digital automated PA in some ways, but probably more than that, because with regard to emails, everyone uses emails. Some more than others, but Outlook email, you can quite easily say summarize this email thread, who's doing what and when's it going to get done. You can give Word documents to PowerPoint, basically say convert this Word document into a 5-slide company tailored presentation for Exco.
Yeah.
And you'll just do it. So there's loads and loads of just general efficiency gains that you can get. But then there's things like Microsoft Excel, which will transform some of the analysis and the finance capability. So while some of the sort of the bigger global insurance and pharma companies are using AI to sort of turbocharge their decision making processes, actually the largest population of tech users haven't yet started to properly embrace AI because of Copilot and G Suite. They're all starting to come out, and I think that's where we'll see some exciting changes, because you've got that many people playing, experimenting, learning and growing and becoming more efficient. I think it'll be I think that's where there'll be some new sort of innovation, and ultimately it'll enable companies to be far more efficient.
You'll
be able to do way more with the same people, I think, rather than it sort of being an opportunity to reduce your workforce. I think it's more just about being way, way more efficient and slowing down the amount of recruitment you need to do. That's a good ROI.
I guess so. It's just hearing you sort of speak them is like, just thinking about the possibilities of it almost becomes, allows like exponential level of growth if your time is literally spent on all the high value stuff. It's saying the idea generation and you know, sharing, collaboration, and none of the manual stuff that sits in there that can just be taken care of. Like, it's going to become such a competitive landscape, isn't it, about how people can best
absolutely
use that.
And those I gave those two examples just because they're sort of quite easy to interpret, because most businesses use Teams or similar. Everyone uses email, and then creation, finessing of presentation material, using company standard slides and palettes and fonts and all that stuff can just be like done instantly.
Yeah. Exciting. Brave new world, isn't it?
Yes.
but it is. It always blows my mind when I think about it. The internet's been around 40 years, and you know, you think about when human beings stepped foot on this earth and where we are today, and the internet literally was that very, very small window, and then in the last 2 years,
yeah,
it's taken such a gargantuan leap forward, like that flash in the pan. It's just, it sort of blows your mind, doesn't it, to think about where we're going to be in the next sort of 5-10 years. To the degree, like when, you know, a couple of young daughters, I almost find it impossible to predict what their life is going to be like when they enter into the world of work. You know, 6 and 4, so we're talking like 10 years away. And we think about what's happened in the last 2 years, it's almost impossible.
There was a documentary I watched recently, and there was some interviews and studies basically done after World War II, asking people what they thought the year 2000 would look like. And it's it's all very, you know, it's obviously black and white when they were doing the filming. People were drawing things and describing things. But it was all quite dark. It was like a projection that technology was going to make...
Dystopian, exactly.
And it was going to make life harder. And essentially, robots will be controlling and running things. And I think you look at it today, generally, it's just absolutely improved the quality of life. Mm. It's made us... be able to spend more time doing what we want to do, and it augments and makes us better in many ways. You know, obviously you can use things in a different way, but generally we are just much more efficient, and it's may improve the lives of everybody. So I think going back to the, like your daughters, and thinking, and I've got young kids, is I think so long as there's appropriate levels of governance, because AI is absolutely an emerging tech, and it's only really been brought into the mainstream since ChatGPT, really. Yeah. I think as long as the appropriate governance and control in there, then in the next 10-20 years, the tech should just enhance the lives of those around us, and hopefully ourselves as well. And
let's hope so.
Yeah.
There's definitely the whole ethical argument, isn't it, about what, you know, obviously when you get that level of power, controlling it in an ethical way, but you know, you'd like to think it's sort of on everyone's radar early enough that we get to that point, you know, together. but it's an interesting future ahead of us. But look, Greg, really enjoyed today, really enjoyed the chat, and I think it's been a fantastic episode, and really interesting to understand a bit more about your approach to things as a CTO, and, you know, without blowing smoke up your own derriere, I can see why you've been successful as a CTO with a lot of the ideas you've shared today. But I always like to sort of end every podcast by asking the same question, which is, what's your favourite piece of advice that you've ever been given or you've ever heard that you would care to pass on to your fellow human?
Well, it's a great question, and it... I've heard this on a few occasions across my career, my life actually, but I read it in a book a couple of weeks ago, and it was the Arnold Schwarzenegger Be Useful book.
Oh yeah,
And his advice, I think he got it off his dad, was listen more than you talk. Mm. So when you're talking, you're often projecting and communicating what you already know.
Yeah.
And when you're listening, you might actually learn something new.
Yeah.
So shut up and listen, I think, was his advice in his book. Obviously, there's a time and a place and you need to talk. But absolutely, some of the most impressive people that I've worked with and for have been great listeners.
Yes.
And then they talk, and it matters when they talk, rather than just talking for the sake of it.
Yeah.
So that's it, yeah. Listen like more when you more than you talk.
And actually listening when someone's speaking, rather than just thinking about, right, what am I going to say next when this person's finished talking.
Absolutely.
He's a very wise man, Arnie, isn't he, considering he gets a bit of a bad rep. But no, well, look, Greg, really appreciate you coming on. Thanks very much. And yeah, look forward to keeping in touch and seeing you go from strength to strength at First Aid Group. So, but all the best with it. And please come on again in future and let us know how you're getting on.
Thanks very much. Love to.